not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So yesterday, the big news was the Pandora Papers. Like someone opened the box and magically we found out something. Again, as I said yesterday, we've known this for a long time. And I had a bunch of people yelling at me. Well, how could you discount, you know, that all this work was done? And how could you, you know, degrade the work? I didn't degrade anything. I simply said, we've known this, that we've seen the movie before. This is reruns. This is like Happy Days or MASH. We've seen the reruns over and over again. We know how it's going to end. And sadly, I don't think it's going to matter because we're used to not doing anything about it. Just a little outrage, a couple of Facebook posts, which yesterday, with Facebook down, was kind of like a gift because, well, nobody can talk to each other because we don't do that anymore. But anyway, here to share some thoughts on the Pandora Papers. I've asked our good friend Bob Lord to come back and talk to us. Bob's the counsel to the Americans for Tax Fairness Group, also associate fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. Bob Lord, thanks for taking time for us, man.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So
good to be here.
Let's start with my basic premise. Virtually everything in here we already knew, and we've known a couple of times over. We've seen this. We saw it with the Panama Papers. We saw it when South Dakota decided they were going to be a tax haven. We've seen all this, and yet we've chosen to never do anything really substantive about it. Is this going to matter? Is it going to change anything this time?
Absolutely. We knew it all was there, but still, props to the folks who got all this information out there. It's a lot of work going through, what was it, 11.7 million documents. And it just, at least it makes it just a little bit harder to deny that it's out there. And Rick,
did anybody deny it? I mean, was there anybody out there denying that this exists?
I think they've denied the level of it.
This is the worst kept secret ever.
Exactly. But, you know, the scope of it is getting harder to deny. Yes, you couldn't deny that there were folks out there hiding their wealth, but how many? And I mean, this really was some stunning stuff that we knew it was happening, but to actually see it confirmed, where we have all these governmental leaders from all around the world who are, you know, they're all in the tank.
And again, what's new about this, Bob? You know, but here's the weird thing. This drops on the day that Facebook goes down, and the story about Facebook got more press time and more airtime than we're being fleeced globally by an oligarch who is of politicians, business leaders, sports athletes, singers and music, rich people. Rich people are robbing us blind, and yet Facebook's down.
But, you know, I think the one takeaway that we also knew, but this is the first time we've seen it reported widely, is that America's at the crux of the problem, where America itself is now a tax haven and a secrecy haven.
Yes.
And the way it was reported is, there's not many Americans with their wealth hidden like in Bermuda, because they can hide it right here in South Dakota
or in Nevada or Delaware or in a handful of places.
But South Dakota is way out there. In front,
yeah.
Rick. if it were a pennant race, South Dakota would have a 14-game lead.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But again, I go back to, we've been talking about South Dakota. The first story I found was 2012 in my notes. So I've been talking about South Dakota as a tax haven since 2012.
That's right. And in 2019, a UK writer by the name of Oliver Bullough wrote a book called Moneyland. And he had a couple articles, excerpts from it in The Guardian. And he went right through what was happening in South Dakota. Great read, by the way. If anybody's really interested in the subject, get a copy of Moneyland.
No, I went and I looked at the articles today again because, you know, I had all these people yelling at me because I've been going, well, what are we going to do about it? We've known about this for years and we've chosen to do nothing. Our elected leaders haven't done anything because probably they've got money stashed in South Dakota. Who knows? And for me, you're right. The scope was wow. Personally, I think it's probably worse than even they've imagined because it always is. But now the question is, what are you going to do about it? And I look to you guys, Americans for Tax Fairness. This should be exhibit A of why we need a $6 trillion infrastructure bill and not a $1.5 trillion one.
You know, absolutely spot on, Rick. And what's so maddening is the money's there. I posted something on Twitter today, and I went through what the top 100th of 1% of Americans have. They're sitting on $14 trillion of wealth. This is a group of 13,000 families. Their average wealth is over $1 billion. You take 25% of that wealth from them, you fund that entire Biden infrastructure program, and they still have $750 million of wealth average left each. What's the problem?
Yeah, no, there's no problem. And the thing is, you know, it's not even, this is the weird thing. It's not even the Bezoses and the Elon Musks anymore that are hiding their money because our tax code is so pathetically weak to begin with that they don't even have to pay taxes anyway. There are enough loopholes and enough places for tax avoidance lawyers to get them out of it that they don't even really need to hide it. It's now that, hey, we're just going to be extra greedy and hide even more. So this goes back to my point always. It doesn't matter what the tax rate is. Even if you lowered the top marginal tax rate to 1%, there would be people still trying to hoard and hide to not pay that 1% because they don't want to pay for anyone's kids to get an education. They don't want to pay for infrastructure so people can get to work. They don't want to pay for health care for folks. They don't care about the rest of society. Me, 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 me.
And look at what our society has become, where, you know, ultra high net worth, someone who's just fabulously wealthy, is considered $30 million. We have folks that have 1,000 times that much wealth. Now, if someone has 1,000 pair of shoes or has 1,000 dogs, they're considered a hoarder. But someone has 1,000 times as much wealth as they could ever, ever, ever need, and we don't call them a hoarder, they become a celebrity and we put them on the cover of Forbes. What kind of society does that?
This goes back to the embarrassed millionaire thing. For some reason, I think we all think that someday I'm going to be Jeff Bezos. I can guarantee you one thing. I am never, no matter what I do, ever going to be able to attain the wealth of a Jeff Bezos. There aren't enough lifetimes to me to accumulate that, nor would I want to. And I look to the Bezoses in our billionaire classes and go, you know, instead of hoarding and being this kind of greedy, you know, child shooting off your phallic rockets into the sky and building a giant bathtub boat, how about building a legacy? Leave something behind. And if the government won't do it, you know, call on our philanthropists to go, hey, your ego. But they're not even doing that.
No, and when there is philanthropy, it's not to help poor people. It's, you know, to have a building named after them, or, you know, or
I don't even care about that. We'll name all the buildings Bezos buildings.
Yeah,
we'll change the word building to Bezoses if we can get kids to get an education. If we can get kids to get into school, we can get people to get health care. I don't care what you call them after this. Just we got to get it done. And this is what's so frustrating, Bob, because I look at this Build Back Better plan as an opportunity to repair some of the damage done in the last 40 years of Reaganomics and the horrible conservative policies that have just ripped the working class of this country apart. This is a once in probably the rest of my lifetime ability to maybe reset something for my kids and future generations. And the Democrats fighting over numbers are boogering it up.
And just a handful of them, really two, Manchin and Sinema, holding the whole thing up.
And maybe if we just ate one of them. I mean, at some point, I mean, maybe it has to come to that. Maybe just eat one of the billionaires. I don't know. But at some point, it's got to be something where they go, oh, my gosh, I don't want to be, not me.
Well, you know, there's some billionaires out there, like Nick Hanauer, who said, hey, you know, if we don't do something ourselves, they're going to come with the pitchforks at some point.
Yeah, but when, Bob? When do we finally go, when? Because, you know, I'm looking at, again, back to these papers. I spent an entire day going through the incredible waste, fraud, abuse, the thievery, the hoarding, the greed, all of this stuff. Looking at the King Abdullah, looking at, what is it, the Putin's mistress, Tony Blair. Go across the globe, the president of Kenya. Go and look at these people literally taking food out of the mouths of children to enrich 10 generations down the road. And nobody's got a damn pitchfork.
Right. Right. No, we're it's a sad state of affairs, and this is it. Something's got to happen this time around.
So
Democrats don't get it together, then where are we going to go?
Yeah.
We'll lose the 2022 midterms, and we'll go nowhere for another 10 years.
Do you see this as that moment? Because look, I've had some people go, well, you know, this is like the perfect opportunity now to be able to go, hey, we do need to raise some revenue. This is the perfect opportunity for a wealth tax. This is a perfect opportunity for, say, expanding investments because there's so much money out there. Everyone keeps saying this is the perfect opportunity, yet we have a small problem. We have a recalcitrant Republican Party who is willing to burn the house down because they don't want to pay the debt that they ran up in the last administration, and they don't want to let the Democrats pay the bills for now. They want everything to burn down. So if in that environment, how do you get anything done?
You know, it may already be too late to do something about climate change and stop the planet from burning. But certainly if we don't do something now, it's going to be too late. And they don't care.
And again, these are the people who are the scorched earth people. And this is why, you know, when people say, how come Democrats, you know, don't fight back more? Because you're dealing with somebody who will literally burn your house down.
That's right. Yeah. Mitch McConnell is ready to burn the house down. But, you know, they don't have to let him do it. They could kill the filibuster. And if they're united, they could do what they want to do. But we got some Democrats that aren't in the right place.
Yeah, well, you're in Arizona, right?
I am.
What is with that? With that mess you got as a senator?
Nobody knows. I mean, we don't even know what she wants, Rick. We don't know what she wants. Manchin, we know what he wants. We disagree with him. We think he's going to help burn the house down. But Sinema, we don't even know what she wants.
Well, I think she wants to be left alone in the bathroom.
And she didn't get that.
And, you know, generally, I'm someone who goes, you know, the bathroom, that should be off guard. I, you know, generally, I'm in that, you know, that's off limits. You know, leave someone alone. I got to be honest, though. You know, she's ducked everyone all along the way. She doesn't do town halls. She doesn't engage with the Washington press. She doesn't, you know, do interviews very often. There's literally no contact. You listen to constituents say, we can't get her on the phone. We can't get her staff half the time. I guess if that's the last place you can get a hold of her, I guess you got to go where you can go, right?
Well, did you see the video of her on the plane where this young immigrant who had like done work to get her elected wanted to know if she was going to help get her a path to citizenship, and Sinema just ignored her. They're a foot apart. The young woman's talking to her from standing up in front of her seat in the aisle of the plane, and Sinema wouldn't respond.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, and I keep coming back to, wasn't she like the, you know, the bisexual progressive, you know, going to, you know, be the one that's going to, you know, lead the, you know, the march into the 21st century. And, you know, and she's just gone flipping mad. I mean, you know, for me, it was the whole Dipsy Doo thing while she was voting down the minimum wage, you know, her little, whatever that was, the little dance with the thumbs down. I don't know if she was channeling a female version of John McCain or what. But, you know, I'm going, that was weird. Why would you do that? And she's only gotten weirder.
Well, yeah. And you know, what was terrible about that is, you know, we have a higher minimum wage in Arizona. And it works here. So she was saying, well, my people are already covered, but we're not gonna have a minimum wage for everybody else.
Yeah, screw Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Because ours is still, legally here in Pennsylvania, it's still $7.15 an hour. We haven't raised it since 2006, when it was $7.15 and nothing in between. That was the marching call. And then the feds raised it 2 years later up to $7.25, and that's where our minimum wage is, the lowest of any state around us. And interestingly enough, we're not stealing jobs from all the other higher wage states like we were promised. We're actually still losing jobs.
Well, because the wages that workers are paid are a tiny fraction of the cost of doing business. They could raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour tomorrow across the board. These corporations would all be just fine.
Right. So let's get back to the Panama Papers. In looking at this, I mean, I don't think there's any legislation anywhere. I don't think there's any politician who's really made any comments. I haven't seen any business leaders. It's quite interesting that nobody's really came out that I can see. Maybe you know somebody who has made some definitive statements on this. But it's interesting that it's kind of been, in the power circles, a lot of silence.
There's been a lot of silence. I mean, some of the tax legislation will cut back on what South Dakota is doing a little bit, but it's not enough. It's just not enough. I mean, for these dynasty trusts to go on for hundreds of years, I think we talked about this on another show, Rick. We're literally going to have families with trusts holding trillions of dollars.
Yeah. How, see, this is what we do. We find that building in South Dakota that's got like 20,000 companies in it, and we bomb it. Oops. Sorry. You just lost all your wealth. It's over. Now go get a job. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
I'm not part of that. You're on your own, Rick, on that one. I'm behind you on most stuff, but not there.
There's nobody in the building anywhere. They're just P.O. boxes. There's nobody there. We're not talking about taking people out. We're just taking these trusts out. All of these pass-throughs where all this money's hoarded, just bomb the whole thing.
Bomb the money.
Bomb the money. Now go get a job. There's got to be a way to go. And I'm not inciting terrorism. I was joking. I don't have the capacity to drop a bomb on a building in South Dakota. But legislatively, we should be able to do something along those lines. There's my point. So there it is. But Bob, I appreciate you taking a little time for me. Even if we did go somewhere off a rail.
Thanks, Rick.
Good stuff, Bob Lord, Council for Americans for Tax Fairness, who does not, under any way, shape, or form, endorse bombing the trust buildings that are holding all of the billionaire cash. He had nothing to do with that. But I'd love to hear your thoughts. Should we have a legislative fix to how we get rid of all this? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1886. That was the day Henry George accepted the nomination to run for mayor of New York on the United Labor Party ticket. In cities across the country, trade unionists met to found state labor parties and to hammer out political platforms for local and state elections. In New York City, ULP advocates issued the Clarendon Hall platform and nominated Henry George as the ULP candidate for the mayoral race. George had gained prominence with the 1879 publishing of his book, Progress and Poverty. In it, he addressed private land ownership as the basis for inequality and advocated for a single tax system. At New York's Cooper Union that evening, where thousands of supporters gathered, George addressed the crowd.
He presented the ULP platform of higher wages, shorter hours, better working conditions, government ownership of railroads and communications, and the end to police repression. Burroughs and Wallace described the scene that night in their book, Gotham, A History of New York City, to 1898. During his speech, George declared, quote, "This government of New York City, our whole political system is rotten to the core." He argued that politicians had made a trade out of assembling votes and selling them to powerful interests. What business got in return was police protection, lax enforcement of housing and health codes, friendly judges, and fat franchises. To purify the political order, working class voters had to sever ties to all the established parties and choose from their own ranks. For a party that had just been founded weeks before, George came in second. But like its sister organization in Chicago, the New York ULP would split over issues of socialism within a year.
Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So clearly I was not inciting violence. So YouTube, don't give us another strike. My thought is look, you see this tax haven, and all these tax havens are, for those who don't know, are they're just big buildings with lots of PO boxes. They're all corporate addresses. There's nobody actually who works in it. They're just depositories. And it's where you set up your business address. The businesses don't have bank accounts. They don't have any records of assets or leaders or anything. It's just a place to go and shield yourself from liability. It's a way to hoard money, through these shell corporations. And it's a way that, deadbeat fathers, get out of beaten child support, the better off ones. Not just your idiot deadbeat who can't find a job. But I'm talking the really well-to-do ones, the people who can afford to set up a trust. And you may remember, Delaware was advertising here in Pennsylvania to set up limited liability trust. Nevada was advertising huge for years. Set up your company in Nevada and shield your assets from anyone you may wrong. And that was the pitch, that you could hide all your stuff. And the liability laws were so weak that even if someone sued you, they'd never get anything. And South Dakota was the king of it. And these stories have been going on forever. You go to the Cayman Islands, you go to Bermuda, you go to a bunch of these places that Panama, you think the Panama Papers. A bunch of these buildings are just, tons of P.O. boxes. And what we need to do is we need a legislative bomb. We need legislation that is going to wipe these things out and make them illegal. Because the one thing that this report did highlight is that it's even worse than we thought. Because one of the stories that I was reading, it was like 10 years ago, was saying that, eventually if this grows at this pace, it's going to be, hundreds of billions of dollars. Well, we're past that. It's even worse than they had imagined back then. And I would argue, since we don't even really know, that it's even worse than even that. And, for me, I've had people give me the laffer curve argument that, if you tax people at 100%, you'll have no wealth and no money will come in. And if you tax people at zero, no money will come in and no taxes will come in and you won't be able to. So you have to find that middle ground of where rich people aren't going to avoid paying taxes. And, where they won't spend too much time, energy, and resource avoiding paying taxes, and where they're okay paying taxes. Which, I put that number at less than 1%. Because we are now finding out that the people who aren't even paying taxes still doing it. And that's crazy. It really is. And it's frustrating because ultimately, and believe it or not, ultimately what we end up with is a scenario where the very wealthy continue to hoard and hoard and hoard, and our kids go without education. Our kids get saddled with a lifetime of student loan debt, for instance. Our kids get diminished opportunities as monopolies continue to take hold, and these huge trusts continue to grow without anybody knowing they exist. giving, you know, our global elite. And this is where, you know, you get some of the kookery who say, well, you know, there's a global cabal of, you know, yeah. And they're not hiding it. There's no secret. There's no secret meetings. There's no decoder rings. There's no, you know, weird handshakes and, you know, putting your thumb at your nose. There's none of that stuff. They hold their meetings. We know who they are. They're the business roundtable. They're the global elites in corporate America. We know who they are. They meet often. And they share the same network of advisors. An entire industry set up on cheating working people as much as they can possibly do it. For me, this is one of those moments of opportunity to unite the working class. Because here's the weird thing. I know Trump supporters who are just as ticked about this as I am. I know people who are the most anti-government people you'll ever meet, yet the government should do something about this. Yeah, this is, could be a uniting thing. This could be, Joe Biden should come out tomorrow and go, you know what? They're telling me I can't have $3.5 trillion to get you, your kids' education, to get your grandmother some hearing aids and some teeth, to get you, to get, you know, your kids, when they get out of high school, an opportunity at a higher education, to make sure that you get to Social Security or to Medicare or to, you name it, to end childhood poverty and homelessness, to do anything. They're telling me I can't do it because we don't have the money. And yet, we got these criminals. And that's who these people are. These people are shirking their responsibility to this country. And just because South Dakota set up a legal framework for them to be able to cheat the rest of the country doesn't mean it's right. Because I had someone else tell me, well, you know, they're doing, what they're doing is perfectly legal. No, you don't get to buy the system, change the rules to suit you, and then go, see, look, the rules say I can do whatever the hell I want to do because I wrote the rules. I bought the politicians. And then they fund all of these right-wing groups that tell you government's bad. Don't let government do anything. Put Google and Facebook on the UN. So that we can go and we can do more global kind of policy to ensure that we never hold these people accountable. Never. While they, of course, rob us blind. And there's so many of these studies out here, and this is why I get frustrated. Honestly, this is why I'm so frustrated all the time when these stories just pop up. Oh my gosh, look at this. We finally found it. Breaking news. Rich people are stealing. Breaking news. Rich people don't pay taxes. Breaking news. Oh, my God, there's a global cabal of corporate thieves who are robbing us blind. Yeah, okay. Didn't we just go through this several times? Haven't we gone through this before? Have we seen this movie a bunch? Yes, we have. But what I haven't seen is the response to that movie where people really do go get the pitchforks. And by pitchforks, I mean vote. Throw these bums out. Put people into power who can't be bought. But that's never going to happen because, well, I guess everybody can be bought, right? Look what's going on in Arizona with Kristen Sinema. Was it the $750,000 from Big Pharma? I don't know. Going to be interesting if we ever find out. Love to hear your thoughts, though. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Should we break up the big trusts? Should we do something? I'm looking for my Teddy Roosevelt. Where's TR? We need a trust buster. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Our wetlands and wildlife centers are taking care of animals and cleaning the poison off the animals now.
Massive oil spill off the Southern California coast despoils fish and fowl.
Our coastline is too precious. It's too vulnerable. And we need to prevent anything like this from happening ever again.
SoCal beaches are closed with calls renewed for offshore drilling ban. Plus, big oil is spending big bucks to block climate provisions in Biden's Build Back Better agenda.
Oh, you bet they are. All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The U.S. government is also rapidly approaching the debt ceiling. It would be what one economist called financial Armageddon. That's bad news. And even worse timing, because America has already scheduled a plague Armageddon, a climate Armageddon, and a democracy Armageddon.
Yes, it has. This is your Green News Report.
Can we pencil that in for next Wednesday? Maybe a lunchmageddon?
Okay, Desi Doyen, just last week we were talking about a California natural gas company that was forced to settle after the largest methane leak in U.S. history. And here we are this week with another huge oil spill in Southern California.
Yes, we are. The cause of a massive oil spill off the coast of Huntington Beach, California, is under intense investigation after a 17-mile-long undersea pipeline that runs from an aging offshore crude oil processing platform ruptured sometime on Friday or Saturday, releasing at least 130,000 gallons of crude oil.
Oh, it was on Friday, because that's when the residents started complaining about it. Officials didn't do anything about it, however, until Saturday.
It is already one of the largest oil spills in recent California history, generating an oil slick more than 13 square miles and closing miles and miles of the state's famous beaches and halting commercial and recreational fishing operations. Dead fish and birds are washing up on shore. The oil spill has also infiltrated the entirety of the fragile Talbot Wetlands, a critical link along the migratory bird route from North America to South America. Texas-based oil rig and pipeline owner Amplify Energy shut the pipeline down on Saturday. Divers are trying to find the location of the rupture. Huntington Beach Mayor Kim Carr on Monday said it's still unclear if the pipeline crude oil has stopped leaking.
We know that the pipe has been shut down, but we're not sure yet if there's still oil coming out of that pipe. And we also want to know exactly how did this happen? When is it going to be repaired, and how can we make sure that this never happens again?
Those are good questions.
The LA Times reports that Amplify Energy has amassed a long record of federal noncompliance incidents and violations and emerged from bankruptcy just 4 years ago.
Of course they did. Didn't you say it was a Texas company?
Yes.
Yes.
Officials say it will take several weeks, possibly months, to clean up and reopen soiled beaches and fishing grounds, creating an extended economic hit to local businesses and the tourism, outdoor recreation, and commercial fishing industries just starting to recover from the pandemic. Orange County Supervisor Katrina Foley told CNN, quote, "These are wetlands that we've been working to make sure to create this beautiful natural habitat for decades. And now, in just a day, it's completely destroyed."
Wow, just horrific.
The spill has renewed pressure on lawmakers to phase out all oil and gas production off the California coast. The state legislature in recent years banned new fossil fuel infrastructure in state waters, but experts have called the decades-old existing offshore platforms and pipelines lining the coastline an aging time bomb. On the broadcast, the state director for the nonprofit group Environment California, Laura Dean, cited the mounting risks of these existing oil operations to wildlife, the economy, and the climate.
When you think about the consequences of not ending our dependence on oil, the costs to our society are so much greater. We can no longer afford to have these really significant negative events like a massive oil spill off our coast.
Meanwhile, in the nation's capital, big oil is spending big bucks to kill climate provisions in President Joe Biden's $3.5 trillion Build Back Better plan, now under tense negotiations in Congress. Here's independent Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont on CNN.
Insurance companies, the fossil fuel industry are spending hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars to prevent us from doing what the American people want.
Sanders is correct. CNN reports that since mid-August, the oil industry's powerful lobbying group, the American Petroleum Institute, alone has spent millions of dollars in ads in congressional swing districts to attack President Biden's plans and blitzing social media, including spending $500,000 on Facebook ads alone. Mm-hmm. Separately, ExxonMobil, the nation's largest oil and gas company, has spent at least $1.6 million on Facebook ads in opposition to the climate provisions in the bill.
Of course they have. Let's hope we don't fall for it again this time. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, fun story. In my former hometown of Cleveland, evidently a guy running for Congress, this Max Miller, described as an all-around great guy, according to Donald Trump. I guess he's filed a defamation suit against the former White House press secretary, Stephanie Grisham. Evidently, Miller and Grisham had been a thing. It's been reported that I guess the relationship broke up when he pushed her against the wall and slapped her across the face after she had accused him of infidelity. You know, all around great guy. He's filed a suit to make her stop. There you go. So all around great guy. So yay. Fun. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories that they maybe weigh in on the woman who wrote the tell-all book. I've asked our good friend, former Ohio congressman and political analyst Bob Ney to come talk with us. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, Rick, hello. We couldn't make this stuff up. If you and I sat for a weekend and said, let's just create an HBO story, I don't think we could do it.
Yeah, I don't even think Fox would buy
this. Extent. People would say, it's impossible. I don't know. But this story, Max Miller, as you said, he's a high congressional candidate, and the president campaigned for him, and then Mike Carey, because they were both running around the same time. And, of course, Trump said, that he was a great guy, but now he's filed a defamation suit. And I thought, well, that's really kind of really nice during the middle of the campaign to do that,
Yeah, I mean, that, especially since did anybody mention it? His name wasn't mentioned in any of the books or anything.
No.
Why draw this kind of attention to yourself of being a woman beater?
Right. Grisham published the op-ed in the Washington Post, and that was yesterday, yes. She published an op-ed in the Washington Post, and she said she told President Trump, and I think the First Lady at that time, that a unnamed ex, there, she had named Miller, but an unnamed ex right. had become violent. But she said they didn't seem to be fazed by it. And supposedly they knew about this. And so she then contends, Grisham, that this was, because the president knew and the First Lady knew a while back, that this was a gut punch to her. And, of course, then he's coming out. And, again, the other thing is, if you're going to sue, you get deposed, and then you have something called discovery.
Yeah.
Where
they
really
ask you, did you slap her?
Right.
And then you're going to have to lie under oath and say, no, I would never do that.
Right, and also there's another thing, and sometimes I will admit this is unfair, but if you are a public figure, and he is because he's running for Congress, then your chances of winning a libel suit are pretty low.
Yeah.
And again, I think sometimes that's unfair. They can basically say just about anything they want about you. And so he's arguing now in the middle of his congressional campaign about a libel suit that really has no hopes to go anywhere anyway.
Yeah, I mean, this is very Trumpian.
this is weird.
It is weird. But here's the other weird thing is, why would it be a gut punch to her that Trump would do nothing of some guy, you know, assaulting her, when this is the guy who's the grabber by the you-know-what guy?
Right. Well, somehow she thought, of course, if I agree, why would it be a gut punch if nothing was done about him at the time? Why would she think anything would be different?
Yeah, I mean, and you're going to the president with this? Doesn't he have underlings for this?
Right, right.
You see, if it were me, you know, I would go to the guy next to me and go, hey, he slapped me. Go right. Get him.
And, well, and then also the suit he's filed in Cuyahoga County, and he, in the common pleas court, is asking the judge to force her not to repeat the claim she's already made in the post.
And he's confirmed that it's him.
Right, exactly. Right. She had an unnamed.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the amazing part to me. This is one of those scenarios where you go, shut up, stupid.
Right, exactly. Right.
Why confirm what people were going to guess? Because to be honest, I didn't know they were dating, and I didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
But now we know. And because he's done this. And here's the weird thing. I think he's going to win.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, well, not going there with me.
He may. I don't know. It depends on, and I must admit, I'm not familiar with the opponent. Are you familiar with the opponent at all?
I'm really not, but I'm looking at this and I'm going, this just seems, well, par for the course of the time that we're in.
Right. You know, he, of course, was challenging Anthony Gonzalez, who was a congressman and had opposed Trump, Republican.
Right.
And then he voted against him because Gonzalez voted to impeach Trump for incitement of insurrection. And from what I understand, it was pretty serious against Gonzalez's family, where he finally said, okay, you know, I'm done. And that's how that happened. But I don't know the opponent, so I don't know if there's, you know, any type of chance that he could potentially lose this or not. I don't know.
Yeah, but I look at Gonzalez and you go, how is it a guy, you know, an Ohio State football star who supposedly single-handedly beat Michigan is walking away from being the top dog in Ohio politics?
Mm-hmm. Right. Now he also. His uncle is a pretty well-known guy, Aaron David Miller, who was involved with the international peace programs and writings, and also he worked for the State Department for 24 years. So it's kind of a, you know, well-known person up there in that area. So that may, I guess, help Miller no matter what he's done.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. And now I'm sure if he does get elected, people will still ask him. We'll ask him, hey, you still beat your girlfriends?
Right.
I'm sure that is coming down the road. Let's move along. The president was out on the stump today, something we've talked about. He needs to get out and tell the story. He needs to get out and sell the Build Back Better plan. You think he did that today?
Well, I think he did. I mean, I think he has always... I think basically he's always been able to, you know, defend what he's doing. I think it has become unclear due to the infighting, frankly, over the number. You know, I think that there's been more infighting and more, you know, confusion over the number. And so I think the president brings it back home to talk about, you know, the issues, I would think.
No, I mean, it's... I'm hoping he does more of this. I'm hoping to get more surrogates out there to start pushing on this and selling this, so that maybe we get a little bit of pressure. But ultimately, I don't know that it's going to matter. I think everybody's in their silos, and it's going to come down to Manchin and Sinema, because the Republicans, they're dug in. Mitch McConnell, you got Mitt Romney now saying that he's going to filibuster the debt ceiling increase. It just seems like we're stuck. Unless Democrats figure out how to drive the steamroller.
Well, it is stuck, and I think one of the reasons the president, and it's the right thing to do, is out on the stump today, and he will continue to be out there, you know, talking about the facts of what he wants to do and what's going on in the country, is because at one time he was encouraging President Obama, you know, who would get, you know, a win or would have a major program, and as good as Obama was, you know, at articulating the issues, which he really was, but he kind of wouldn't give it time. You know, he would move on to something else. And I think what Biden's doing here is, you know, not necessarily moving on to something else, but trying to, you know, salvage, you know, what he has, what he's addressed, you know, what they've introduced and what they want to do. But again, the infighting, and it still baffles me, Rick, you and I have talked endlessly about this, but, you know, there's a number. And I think when President Biden addressed the private caucus meeting of the Democratic side the other day in the Capitol, he was throwing out numbers. He was saying maybe 1.9, maybe. I mean, he was throwing numbers out. And then he made a very valid point about the programs, which is what we've talked about too. So I think if there was a chance that this was going to stay at $3.5 trillion, I could see for the last 60 days these arguments. It isn't going to stand there. But then there's other issues, too. The debt ceiling, and you're right, they're not going to have any support on it at all, so they're going to have to do short-term measures probably till December, you know, and then try to continue on with it.
Yeah.
Today, the president on the stump said, you know, about, you know, doing something with the filibuster. I doubt that can occur because the votes aren't there again.
No, I mean, we're in this stuck spot where
it's stuck.
Know, they're you know, you're not going to move, you know, Manchin, and Sinema's just, you know, I'm not sure what to make of the craziness coming out around her.
Well, Manchin has been the face of this all along. You know, it's been Manchin. Just, you know, Sinema's name came in only relatively, really recently, Rick, as you know. And I think as angry as some people in the progressive movement have become with Manchin, the other day, a couple of the members of Congress at least gave him credit for, you know, being out front and at least it seems willing to discuss things. With Senator Sinema, it's a different ballgame. She's kept everything close to the vest. She hasn't really revealed and doesn't intend to, you know, certain ideas she has or what she wants. And at least with Manchin, they kind of know the direction he wants to go. With her, they don't. Mm-hmm. I think she just wants nothing to happen.
And that's weird. I mean, that's
nothing.
Really weird.
And nothing is not an option. And losing all this is not an option. So that's why, you know, there's a middle ground and, you know, take some wins and, you know, go with, the language. Everything's been the numbers. And that's why I think the president's trying to define the substance.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good thing. I think that's good. But, you know, here's the weird thing. Yesterday we had the Pandora Papers drop. We find out that, you know, the global elite are hiding trillions of dollars all over the world, stuffing things right in mattresses and in safe havens and places like South Dakota.
South Dakota, right. And Nevada,
and look,
right.
There's nothing new about this. I mean, we've known about this for, you know, for over a decade now. It's a matter of what are we going to do about it? I mean, if I'm Biden, do you not come out now and go, look, they're telling me we don't have money, but evidently there's a building in South Dakota. We could go rob the building in South Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going with me there either. So I can't bomb it. I can't rob it.
Because if we rob a building in South Dakota, we're going to go to jail. We need to go to the Capitol. Then you don't go to jail.
See,
you know?
And I'm talking, you know, figuratively here.
I know you are.
We need to get some pens and some paper, and we need to start writing some legislation to blow this stuff up.
Well, I think they do. I mean, you know, obviously all this money's been held there. They've got out-of-country people bringing, which is so weird. I understand offshore companies where money goes from different countries around the world into the offshore, you know, in the Caribbean and Caymans and things, but to actually have overseas individuals bringing money into here, into South Dakota, is bizarre. It's just bizarre.
Yep.
And then, of course, South Dakota has intentionally made laws that shield everything. It's intentional to get the money.
It's really just twisted and bizarre. And
it is.
And And it's one of those things where you don't even need to go to Switzerland anymore. I mean, everybody knows, you know, rich people hide their money in Switzerland. But they never thought it was South Dakota.
South Dakota, exactly.
Are they sticking it up the nose of the people in Mount Rushmore?
I don't know, but I would never have picked that as the place. Maybe Nevada.
Nevada's also one of those limited liability states, along with Delaware. But,
right.
But South Dakota, Bob, this isn't a secret. This came out in 2012. I've been talking about this forever.
For a long time.
This
right.
is not new. I mean, when the Panama Papers came out, it was the
right.
same thing. We were talking about tax havens and limited liability corporations, shell corporations, and how rich people actually hide their money, and nothing got done then, and nothing's getting done now.
So it makes you wonder, you know, is there, I mean, something so powerful out there, so much money out there that everybody says, well, we can't touch that.
Yeah.
What's the fear factor?
There isn't, and nobody's mentioned, nobody said anything. There's been almost no statements from any powerful people whatsoever.
Right,
and we find
right.
out it's government officials, it's corporate, it's the oligarch, the Russian oligarchs, it's the captains of industry, it's entertainers, it's athletes, it's all these rich people have gone, hey, there's an industry out there, an entire industry of people to shield me from paying taxes. I'm going to go that route. And some of it's legal, some of it not so much.
Right, definitely. Some of it's shady. But you're right. I mean, nobody wants to go after it. Nobody.
And for me, this is how we. You want to pay for stuff? We're not broke, evidently.
Go out there. Mm-hmm. Right. There's money.
There is money, and there's lots of it. I mean, that's the weird thing.
There's a lot of money out there with the 1% too.
Yeah, and for some reason, we only focus on each other. This is the weird thing to me. I go back to the old Jay Gould quote, I can pay half the working class to murder the other half. We only focus on somebody you can see across the street.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Crazy stuff.
Strange.
Crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But Bob, I appreciate the time. As always, good stuff.
Thank you,
we're
going
to be taking a little break. I hope you have a good break with us. We'll see you back
too.
Here on the other side of our trip to Alaska.
Okay. Have a good trip.
Good stuff. Thanks so much, Bob. Appreciate it, as always. Our good friend Bob Nag. Let's take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
This is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1945. That was a day known in Hollywood as Black Friday. After World War II, the movie industry began to rake in profits. But they did not pass those profits along to their employees. 10,000 members of the Conference of Studio Unions were on strike. They were part of the Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners. They were also in a jurisdictional battle with the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, or IATSE, over who should represent stage decorators. The strike wore on for half a year. The studios had more than 100 films backlogged and were able to wait out the strikers. But as the strike continued and the studios remained silent, pressure mounted. Despite the tensions between the two unions, thousands of IATSE members refused to cross the picket lines. On Black Friday, the strikers decided to concentrate their efforts at the Warner Brothers Studios gate. 300 picketers gathered to hold the line. Scabs, hired by Warner Brothers, tried to drive through the workers' picket lines to the studio. Variety accounted what happened next, writing, quote, "Strikers deployed from their barricades, halted non-strikers, and rolled three automobiles on their sides." By noon, reinforcements arrived from both sides. Firemen were called in to turn their hoses on the striking workers. Warner Brothers security deployed tear gas. Common for the time, accusations were hurled that the Conference of Studio Union Strikers were communists. As a result of the strike, the Conference of Studio Union's employees were assigned to other jobs in the studios. When they refused, they were locked out. The union never recovered. The violence at the Warner Brothers Studios gate also helped to fuel the passage of the Taft-Hartley Act through Congress, which eroded union protections. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, today's our last show for a couple of days. A little break. Everyone needs a little break every now and again. And a little work. We're going to be traveling to Anchorage, Alaska One of the my Teamster locals out there who brings us out for their stewards training sessions. Do a little speaking gig, do some training, do the show, do a show from there, and do some interviews, and you know, do the kind of things that I like. I really like doing. I like getting out amongst workers and talking about their stories and sharing some of their stories. But we're going to be taking some time off, little work, little vacation. I'm going to take the kids to Alaska. Maybe we'll see the Northern Lights, if it doesn't rain too much. Because as it would be, it's going to rain while we're there. So I'm looking forward to seeing Alaska again. Looking forward to seeing our good friends in Teamsters Local 959 there in Anchorage, and share some thoughts and ideas of how we move this country forward, how we get things done. And we move this country forward for working people. You know, our goal is here on the program is always to try and figure out how do we create better lives? How do we make sure that the work we do benefits us and our communities? How do we get our government to do things that are going to move the ball forward so that we all do better? You know, I still believe in some of those things I learned as a kid, that if you work hard, you play by the rules, you can get ahead. And for me, you do that through the collective bargaining process. You do that as a union member. And sometimes, you know, it's not easy. Sometimes it's messy. Sometimes you're going to have tensions like Striketober. But that will make us stronger. That will move us forward. And I'm looking forward to that. And again, we're going to be taking some time off playing some old shows. There will be things obviously to be heard, and maybe stick around to hear some of the most recent programs that we're going to throw out to highlight over the next couple of days. We will be back on the Tuesday next after taking a little over a week off, just to recharge the batteries, enjoy our trip, and to do a little educating. I'm excited to see my friends out in Anchorage. The last time we were there, it was an absolute blast, and really enjoyed it, and looking forward to the folks in Fairbanks as well, as we have an affiliate out in that area. So looking forward to seeing those folks. If you missed any of today's program, TheRickSmithShow.com, that's where you go to get the podcast. The Rick Smith Show app on the smartphone. Take the program on the go wherever you go. And as always, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Make sure you follow us on social media at Rick Smith Show on Twitter. Like us over on Facebook when it's working. And, you know, maybe subscribe to our YouTube channel. Share one of our videos. And while we're off, you can take a look at any of the content that we do. Good stuff. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here after our vacation.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Most people believe the American economy is rigged by and far bankers, CEOs, and other super rich elites because it is. With their hired armies of lawmakers, lobbyists, lawyers, and the like, they fix the economic rules so ever more of society's money and power flows uphill to them. Take corporate CEOs. While 2020 was somewhere between a downer and devastating for most people, the CEO class made out like bandits, with each of the three top-paid corporate honchos pocketing as much as $1 billion in personal pay. Are they geniuses or what? What? All three of their corporations ended 2020 with big financial losses and declining value. So how can such mediocrity produce such lavish rewards? Simple. Rig the pay machine. Today's corporate system of setting compensation for top executives is a flimflam disguised as a model of management rectitude. On its face, it sounds good. Pay for performance, it's called, meaning the CEO does well if the company does well. But who defines doing well? The scam at most major corporations is that the standard of corporate performance that the chief must meet to qualify for a huge payday is set by each corporation's board of directors. Guess who they are? Commonly, board members are the CEO's hand-picked brothers-in-law, golfing buddies, and corporate cronies. So they set the bar for winning multi-million dollar executive paychecks so low that a sack of concrete could jump over it. This is Jim Hightower saying, well, can't corporate shareholders just vote no on any executive excess? Yes, but corporate rules decree that votes by shareholders are merely advisory, meaning top executives can ignore them, grab the money, and run. The system is fixed, and we need to break it. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you lowdowners who subscribe to our monthly newsletter, The Hightower Lowdown. You know who you are. Thank you.